Well, thank you, Mark, and good afternoon, everybody. My name's Cliff York from the Pine Rivers meeting in Brisbane. I want to tip this around here because I don't want to stand behind the rostrum. And I want to start with an open invitation for anybody who's in Brisbane at any time. If you want to come to Pine Rivers meeting, you'll be very, very welcome, and we'd love to see you there. But that's not what we're here for today. We're here to talk about two realities, and like Dick Hillhouse said, the first joke is that it will be 20 minutes. The second joke is that this isn't working. Okay, so thank you for inviting me to give this little talk on two realities. We often find in life, don't we, that there is opposition to things that we do. The life doesn't go as sweet as we sometimes plan it. Things don't fall out the way that we would like. And sometimes we find that there's opposition, and especially in the preaching of the gospel, but in just the simple living of life, there is opposition. Let me just tell you a story. When they pulled cod out of the Murray River down in South Australia and kill the cod and eat them on the banks of the Murray River, they are really, really sweet. There's not too many of the cod left now, so but in the days when you were able to fish them and pull them out, beautiful to eat on the banks of the Murray River. Somebody got the bright idea, of course, that you take them to the Adelaide markets and freeze them on the way and sell them down there, but they never tasted as nice down in the markets. So somebody else got a bright idea, and that they would place the cod in an aquarium and transport them fresh down to Adelaide, then kill them and sell them in the markets. But still the cod weren't fresh. Until one day they carried a consignment of cod down to Adelaide, and in the bottom of the tank were some other fish. And when they pulled the cod out and killed them, they were as good as if they'd just been pulled out of the Murray River and eaten on the banks of the Murray River. What was different? Well, the other fish that were in the aquarium with the cod as they were being transported down to Adelaide to the market were catfish. And catfish are natural predators of the cod. So in life, we sometimes need a catfish in the tank to bring out the sweetness in the life that we live. So, a little while ago, 3 years ago or so, I read this book. It's called The Verbally Abusive Relationship, How to Recognise It and How to Respond. No, I'm not going to talk to you about counselling, but I do highly recommend that everybody get this book by Patricia Evans. It's a book from Dimmicks, and read it, because the biblical overtones that are in there, she's not writing from a biblical perspective, but as we read that book, you can see so much of what is happening in our own lives, and you can put a name to things that are happening, and she gives you some absolutely fantastic tools. So there are two realities, and she calls them reality one and reality two. And they're the two realities that I want to talk about, because in the Bible we find that there are only two realities. The first reality, of course, is that by birth we were all born into the Adams family. Can anybody remember the jingle? They're all together, eeky, geeky, kooky, spooky and dysfunctional. We're all born into the Adams family, and why would we want to stay there? I mean, James says that in James 1 that pure religion and undefiled is to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction. Now, that's just not those who have lost their daddy, their natural daddy, and those that can't find a husband, who have lost a husband or a spouse. Because in the Adams family, the family into which we were born, our first father died of a serpent bite. And it was a long, lingering death. Dying, you shall die. And there's nobody, there's no suitor in the Adams family to rescue us from that melee. There's nobody who can embrace us and take us to a future. The superannuation in this family is defunct. The eternal benefits just aren't there. Why would we want to stay in the Adams family when we can choose to go into God's family by grace? He approaches us, doesn't he, in figure, taking the words of Galatians 4. He adopts us as sons and daughters to become part of his family. He has the adoption papers made out, and they're signed in the blood of his son. And the superannuation benefits in this family are out of this world. And the eternal benefits, we just can't comprehend them. So why would we want to stay in reality one when reality two is an option? Now, I use this type of message when I'm talking to the young people in our circle. And though the Addams Family series is now 30 or 40 years old, somebody must be watching reruns and they get it. It's so simple. Reality one is characterized by wanting to have power over. Now, we learn that from birth. When we're born, we learn very, very quickly a series of cries, about six or seven cries a baby has, they tell us. And the mother can identify from those cries whether the baby is sick, uncomfortable, hungry, needs changing, whatever. But we are born into this system which teaches us to control the family or have power over, because there is no other way that we can get our needs met. No, our needs met, right? That's the reason. Sorry about that. As we grow, though, we're taught by grace and by circumstance and by life to enter into reality two, to embrace reality two, which is not power over others, overpowering, but rather empowering. And that's what the CareLinks ministry is all about, isn't it? That's what the gospel of grace is all about. It's about getting underneath other people and lifting them up so that they can be all that they were created to be. So in reality one, we learn that life is an illusion, a distortion, a fantasy, and a lie. In reality two, we learn that life is a reality. It's real. It's authentic. It's a true experience. Sometimes it's a sad experience. It's not always a happy experience. Remember the catfish in the tank. God will put a catfish in the tank so that the life becomes sweet. So under reality one, in reality one, those who never grow out of reality one, those who are never affected by the gospel of grace, continue to overpower. They continue to want power over others. They continue to want to control the outcomes. But as people embrace the gospel of grace, they learn to empower others, just like Jesus did with the woman taken in adultery or the woman at the well of Samaria. He empowered them to become almighty agents of his, to go out and to share the good news. I believe the woman who was taken in adultery was the one who came back later and burst into the house of Simon the Pharisee while Jesus was having a private meal with him and poured the oil out over Jesus' feet and wept and wiped his feet with her hair. Jesus empowered her to become all that she was created to be. Reality one, unfortunately, lacks empathy, sympathy, and humility. Whereas reality two has mutuality, is co-creative, and is constructive. So we're either destroying or we're constructing. And we've just heard from Duncan and Cindy that they are wanting to construct something tangible, something of reality, so that you can have Bible schools in that far part of the earth. Mutuality. We work together. Despite our differences, we work together in cooperation, co-creating, not destroying, co-creating and constructing conditions that are conducive to the building of God's kingdom. Now, in another life, and not so long ago, I worked and worked and worked for a not yet kingdom. I've done that many lectures on a not yet kingdom, and it didn't cross my mind that we live in a now kingdom. And thank you, Dick, for bringing that out and highlighting it for us today. That we have a now kingdom, a spiritual kingdom, which is as tangible and as real as the not yet kingdom will be when Jesus returns. We'll move seamlessly from this now kingdom into the not yet kingdom. The only difference will be is our nature. Instead of tending to end up in the grave, we'll be tending to life, and that forever. There is a section of the Bible which deals with this, and I want you to open your Bibles now to Matthew 24. And I'm not going to do a verse-by-verse exposition of Matthew 24, but I do want to draw some lessons out of this beautiful little parable near the end of Jesus' series of parables that he told. And just in front of that beautiful chapter of Matthew 25 that tells us that those who are accepted by the Lord at the end are those who have given meat to the hungry, who have given water to the thirsty, who have taken the strangers in when they were harbourless, who have clothed the naked, who have visited the sick, and who have been to the prisons. And if you, in your break, go into just inside the kitchen and have a look at one of the little notices there, and just inside the kitchen is a beautiful little saying there by Mahatma Gandhi about our unspent wealth, our unspent time, our spare clothes, our spare resources, and how we could best use them and utilise them. But I digress. Matthew 24. The question Jesus asks is, who then is a faithful and wise servant in verse 45, whom his Lord has made ruler over his household to give them meat in due season? And there's two important points I want to bring out of that particular verse. And the first point is the meaning of the word household. The word household there is only used four times in the New Testament. One other time in Luke, which is a companion record to this. Another time in Luke, which is talking about the healing activities of Jesus. And the final time is in Revelation 22. If you can just turn with me to that. And in Revelation 22, the final vision of the glorified community as it is in kingdom glory is shared with us in the second verse. God having shown John in verse 1 a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding out of the Lamb of God and of the throne. In the midst of the street of it, on either side of it, was the tree of life, which bare 12 manner of fruits, and yielded her fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree were for the healing. It's the same word as household in Matthew 24. The healing of the nations. The word is the word therapeuta, from which we get our English word therapeutic. And of course, a house of therapy is called a what? Anybody know? What's a house of therapy?
A hospital.
And so we learn from this these two parables here that we are involved in hospitals for saints, hospitals for sinners, not motels for saints. We're involved with bringing wellness and healing to sick people. And so that is what the good and faithful servant is doing in Matthew 45. And he's Matthew 24, verse 45. And he's giving meat in due season to his household. That is a direct quotation from Psalm 145. And it describes the activities of God Almighty, who opens his hands. That's both hands. What's on the end of our hands? Five fingers. That's grace. He opens his hands, and with open hands, God feeds us, blesses us, gives us everything that we have need of to survive. And we are to be God to the nations. We are to be Christ to the nations. We are to be God and Christ to the people that we have to do. And so we have called, in the terms of Matthew 24, to be godlike and open our hands and with both hands practice grace. And that takes the gospel of grace to do that for us. For in reality one, in the parable of the evil servant that follows, we find this. That he was busy in his fantasy world, not in the hospital. He was busy in his fantasy world, a world which he had created. And he had two hands full of evil. As Micah 7 verse 3 describes the activity of those that have not moved from reality one into reality two. In reality two, those that are in reality two are busy in God's hospital, two hands full of grace, as the psalm reveals in Psalm 145. So I just want to make a little table now, and I know comparisons are odious, but this was the quickest way I thought I could get this through to our minds, and I'm happy to share this with you in a written form if you want to take these thoughts home. But when we look at reality one, the evil servant is fool-like. He says in his heart, there is no God. Psalm 14, verse 1. My Lord delays his coming. And I picked up that fact that he says, that he's a fool, rather, because of what he says in his heart. He says in his heart. Who else says in his heart these things? Everywhere in the Bible where it says, he says in his heart, go looking for the underlying problem behind that. And the underlying problem is that he's a fool. He doesn't believe that God is in control. On the other hand, in reality too, the faithful servant is secure and father-like and shares his blessings with everybody. In reality one, the man who stays there is fearful. He has no trust of others and he's suspicious always of others. Jesus spoke of these people. He said, "Why do you always look at me with the evil eye?" You narrow the eye. You can't let the light into the brain. You're out there looking for fault. Whereas on the other hand, those that are in reality too have their eyes wide open. They're faithful, they're trusting God, and they're empowering others to be all that they can be. Psalm 94 tells us that those that are in reality one frame laws for others, which brings misery, as Psalm 94 tells us. Whereas in those in reality two are giving substance and sharing blessings that have come from God. Unfortunately, the man in reality one uses a closed fist as a weapon. And I often illustrate this in my talks. Martin, if I were to try and put your coat on you with my fist closed, how would I go? If I were to try and write a letter to you to encourage you, how would I go? If I were to try and ring a telephone, get a telephone to ring you to encourage you, how would I go? If I went to give you a cup of water, how can I do that with closed fists? On the other hand, the man in reality two has both hands open. And he can put a coat on his brother or his neighbour. He can share a cup of water. He can give a meal in due season. He can ring the doorbell. He can be of benefit to others. Reality one tortures others. When it says he beat his fellow servants, the terminology there takes us to the practice that the Spaniards have perfected in the Inquisition called bastinado, where they laid the victim down on the floor, restrained him and beat the soles of his feet with a cane. And of course the soles of your feet are very, very tender, full of nerve endings and little bones which are easily broken. And so every painful step in recovery after that treatment reminded you of your somebody having impeded your walk. Whereas in reality two, those in reality two are busy nurturing others to be all that they can be. Reality one feeds his own ego and meets his own needs by controlling others. Whereas in reality two, we feed the household and meet the needs of others by so doing, as we've been sharing this afternoon. Reality one is narrow-minded. Reality two is open-hearted. Reality one is cannot accept himself. And this is the key. If you cannot first accept yourself, you cannot accept others. It's pointless to go out trying to convert the world if you don't first love yourself. That's part of the great commandment. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind and strength. And love your neighbour as yourself. If you don't love yourself, not in a narcissistic sense, but if you don't love yourself in the sense that Jesus means, then you cannot accept others where they are on their journey. Whereas in reality too, those that have accepted themselves as to who they are can accept their neighbour for who they are. Reality one has fear in his heart. Reality two has father in his heart. Reality one promotes shame and guilt. I remember what you did. You've got a past. I know you've got a past. I've got it here in my little dossier. Yep, that's right. That's what you did. I'm not going to let you forget that. Whereas reality two promotes healing. Exactly as we heard Dick talk about in his talk. Reality one is driven by the fear of failure. And in our CareLinks ministries, we cannot be driven by a fear of failure. We will not fail. We are part of a mistake-based creation. Not that we are mistakes. None of us are mistakes. God doesn't make mistakes. But we are part of a mistake-based creation. And what's a mistake? Well, when you have take a movie, for example, they take one, take two, take three, take 54. Finally, we get a shot that might be close to it. We go back into the dark room, we turn the light on, and we put the slides up, and we go, well, that one's a mistake, so we'll put that one in the bin. And that one's a mistake, so we'll put that one in the bin. And that one's the one we want to keep. And that's what God does with us. He will work with us until we get the lesson. God has not bent out of shape with our mistakes. We are a mistake-based creation so that we learn by our mistakes. So there is no failure with God when we're led by his Spirit. Reality one is rigid like his arteries. Reality two is flexible like God himself. And I'm dying to hear Duncan's talk, which he's not going to share with us today, but maybe he will one day, where he was discussing with me last night, and very briefly, a very interesting situation at the Joneses last night. We're all sitting there with our laptop computers on, hooked into the internet, and the conversation was very sparse. Oh yeah, we sent emails to each other. No. But Duncan was saying that God often breaks his own rules. And that's a very interesting concept. For those of us that I come from a situation where I thought I had to keep it pure, I had to keep it shiny, I had to be able to present it back to the Lord as shiny as the day he gave it to me. Well, it came to my realisation one day, who looked after it for 6,000 years before I got here? So the rules are, God is flexible and he expects us to be flexible too. Reality one creates idols to control others. And I do want to share this with you. If you learn nothing else today, go home and have a look at this. In Ezekiel 20 and verse 32, and in the Message Bible, you're given a hint as to what an idol is. Most people think an idol is something that you bow down to and spend time in front of. That's not correct. An idol is something that you create with your hands and your intellect that you can control. They wanted to have idols just like all the other nations around about them. What's idolatry? Idolatry is something that you create with your hands and your intellect that you can use to control others. Just think about that. Reality two, worships the God of heaven and earth and is led by his spirit. Reality one, views life through a toilet roll. You ever done that? Okay, yep, I can see you, Ted. Yep, you're absolutely in my... I can't see anything else, but you know what? I can see all your faults. I can't see any of my own. Yeah, well, I won't look at that lovely lady. She hasn't got any faults. Okay? So that's what a lot of people do. They spend their life looking through the toilet roll. Whereas reality two sees the big picture. Reality one ends up becoming a shriveled waste of space. And reality two becomes all that they were created to be. Reality one is manipulative, controlling, destructive, and puts others down so that they can feel better. Reality two engages in mutuality, co-creating, empowering and validating others. If you've got two people in a relationship, one reality one, one reality two, you've got dynamite. It's hard enough when both of you are in the same reality, but if you've got two realities in the same marriage, it's really hard. I know, I speak from experience, but not the present experience, fortunately. Okay, so in summary, I've been talking about two realities, but you know what? In the Bible, there is only one reality. I say that there is only one doctrine in the Bible, and that's the doctrine of grace. Because the word doctrine doesn't mean, to a Hebrew mind, it doesn't mean the teachings. The things that we list on a piece of paper, our doctrines, or the things that they might list on a piece of paper, their doctrines, they're not doctrines, they're beliefs. They're made to be changed. The doctrines are the doctrines of reality. And there are only two doctrines spoken of in the Bible. One is the doctrine of grace, and the other is a doctrine that Paul talks about in Galatians 1. If any man come unto you preaching any other gospel, which is not a good news, it's a bad news. It's a news that wants to control you. It's called legalism. I'm not going to go into that scenario at the moment. But at the end of the day, this is the only reality. Jesus Christ and him crucified, him glorified, and him manifested in the earth in a multitude of beings who are just like him. Faithful servants all, who see the big picture, who become all that they were created to be, engaging in mutuality, co-creating, empowering and validating others where they are on their journey and walking with them to the kingdom together. Thank you.